Blog Talk Radio.
This is Fright Fest, and I am broadcasting around the world, from Bel Air, Florida, to the south, the north, the east, and the west, and slingshotting around the world. Here we go. Ladies and gentlemen, tonight is a great night. I've got Sergeant Dave Walker. Yes, the Master Manhunter. You know, he is a methodical, by the book. I would even call him, well, a relentless manhunter. Though not partial to just catching guys, he'll chase a woman murderer just as diligently, for just as long as it takes to put them where they belong. Behind thick iron bars for the rest of their natural lives. Oh, yeah. Fright Fest Radio. RJ Smith. Storyteller Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is RJ Smith, and on the phone with me, I have Sergeant Dave Walker. He is a methodical, by the book, relentless manhunter. Though not partial to just locking up guys, he'll chase a woman murderer just as diligently. Now, as leader of Tulsa, Oklahoma's homicide unit, he's the one man murderers don't want stalking their scent or to be hot on their trail. As a respected, long-serving member of the Tulsa Sheriff's Office, he seems remarkably comfortable sharing the crime scene with, yes, Mark Gordon's the first 48 television crew. I've been telling you he was going to come on, ladies and gentlemen. I initially encountered the hard-nosed crime fighter while researching the terrible facts for a true crime book that I was going to write, as most of you know, called The Good Friday Killers. The tale had all the hallmarks of a bestseller, yet somehow I couldn't put my head around the senseless hate crime-driven murder of three African-Americans. The Good Friday shooters, Mr. Alvin Watts and Jacob England, eventually pled guilty in exchange for a life sentence it is, with a 9 by 6 foot concrete cell. I figured the story should end there. The killers didn't deserve more publicity. They were dead enders after all, and I wanted nothing to do with them. Sometimes the pay is just not worth the pain. So what does that Dave think? Dave says, I tell detectives that if there is a dead body, that person has just hired you to solve the case. It becomes personal, no matter if the victim is a rich person or a poor person, a drug addict or an athlete. That person has hired you to solve their murder, close quote. Amen. Dave, welcome to the show. Dave, welcome to the show. Oh, my God. Don't tell me we have some technical issues here going on, folks. Dave, welcome to the show. Hello. Sergeant Walker, are you there?
RJ, are you there?
Hey, Dave Walker. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thank you very much.
I'll tell you, this is a new medium of internet radio. Everybody's got it, but they haven't worked out the technical glitches yet.
That's quite all right. I could hear you. You can't hear me, but seems like we're on the same page now.
So I originally met you over this Good Friday killer thing, and I just want to introduce the listeners to what that was all about. If you just bear with me for 1 second.
Alvin Watt and Jacob Anglin are expressing remorse for the murders. TNN reporter Dan Perlman is live with what the now convicted killers had to say. Dan?
Karen, Jacob Anglin read this handwritten statement to the courtroom today. In it, there are the words sorrow, guilt, regret, and sorry. But even though this case is now closed, the healing continues.
Well, today, Mr. Anglin and Mr. Watts pled guilty to life without parole.
Jacob Anglin and Alvin Watts will never again be free, a decision the district attorney's office reached with help from two men wounded last year and three families now with loved ones lost.
And one of the reasons that we did this is that when we talked to the family, they wanted some closure in the case.
Early in the morning on Good Friday last year, Watts and Anglin went on that North Tulsa shooting spree, targeting black men and women. Warren Blakeney was the NAACP president back then. Today, he too welcomes this news.
I think for those victims and for those folks who were certainly affected by it, it brings some closure to them.
That, as we also hear from Anglin, this, the letter, where he refers to his, quote, chaotic, self-destructive downward spiral. A two-paragraph apology. It says in part, there are no words to express the sorrow and guilt I feel for what I have done. It goes on to read, I know nothing I can say will ever bring the victims back, but no, to the end of my days, their names will be etched in my heart. On the letter.
I know that your actions have certainly caused a great deal of hurt.
Dave, what do you have to say to that? I mean, here you have two guys who senselessly went about Tulsa, Oklahoma, late at night. They didn't care about who they were shooting. They just wanted to get vengeance for some supposed, I guess what Jake feels is some payback, which was certainly not worthy. What do you have to say to that, that now he's all of a sudden sorry about this?
Well, I think he has to live the rest of his life with that, and he's trying to make some sense, is what I think. I mean, it's the only way he can live with himself is show a bunch of remorse at this point. I can tell you he had no remorse that night. He didn't have any remorse those days as we were chasing him, and when we caught him, he showed no remorse. So remorse comes later on down the road. Hopefully he's grown up. Hopefully it's not self-serving, but, the damage is done at this point, and it's just time for him to get on with the rest of it and live his life behind bars, and that's where he should be, in my eyes.
Right, and to be fair, fair disclosure, I have been in contact with both David Walker and the mayor's office of Tulsa, and along with the killers. But like I said in the intro, we decided not to go forward with the book. Certainly, there was a lot of hurt people about it. We did get a phone call, collect phone call from the jail last evening. I guess he read or had someone read on the internet. I don't know how they do that in there. That we were doing a show. Dave Walker was going to be on it. We did reject his plea to come on the show. But Dave, let me ask you, you have been at this a long time now. 16 plus accommodations and awards, 30 years plus in law enforcement. Have you ever see yourself giving this thing up?
I certainly do see an end or a light at the end of the tunnel. That's a couple years down the road. It's a tough job. When you get to the point where you talk about people being killed and tracking those people down and then dealing with the families, it's just there comes a point where it's a young man's game, and you got to just realize it's kind of like an athlete saying it's time to hang him up. So that day will come. I don't know when, but it'll be a tough day, I'm sure.
Well, certainly, in your job, and by the way, great job on the first 48. I don't know if they're still shooting out there in Tulsa, but Mark Gordon's production is certainly great. Did you have fun with that?
Well, they are still shooting. They signed up for I don't know who signed up, but they're still here for another year until July. It's an interesting process. It doesn't really affect the way we work. It's just kind of, like I say here locally, it's nice to give the detectives that really do the heavy lifting, some props and some airtime, and it really shows how hard they work and we work as a team to solve the murders. And so it's been a good experience. It hasn't been very difficult at all.
Right, and you are on the record constantly about it is a team effort tracking down these killers when something as horrific as this happens. Let me talk a little bit about how you evolved in law enforcement. You did become a police officer in 1983 as a patrol officer, and you rose through the ranks pretty quickly. In 89, you became a patrol sergeant, went right into SWAT right around that time. How'd you get along in SWAT? Is that your thing?
Well, I mean, eventually, again, it is one of those things where you just have to see if that is what your where your niche is. And even though I spent 10 years on the SWAT team, there are people that do that job that are a heck of a lot better than I am and more capable of doing the things that have to be done. And eventually it was time for me to move on and find a different niche, so to speak. And that's what I did. I resigned from that team 10 years into it and went on to work undercover and moved on from there.
Now, is it all just really a training process, like a regular job and getting promoted and moving through the ranks? Like, I mean, because I see a patrol officer, then a sergeant in SWAT, and then from SWAT you went into narcotics. I mean, so is there like a stepping ladder in law enforcement the same way there is in any career?
Well, it certainly is. I mean, you got to get your feet wet, and that's where you get your feet wet is in the patrol function. And, you know, it probably takes – well, you're always learning out there on the street. So you never say you have it all figured out. And if the day you do is probably the day you need to retire because there's always going to be something that comes up. So all the young officers out there working the streets have visions of being somewhere else. Or there are career patrol officers, which you got to hand it to those folks too. So that's where you start out, and then you just move around from there. And if you've got that innate ability to put things together, and you so desire, a police department is a good place to move about and see different things.
Right, and I know that you'd stayed in internal affairs the least amount of time in your career. That's just something you didn't like.
Well, no, the chief of police and I both agreed that was not my calling. That was a little bit different type of work, and the administration is not where I belong.
So then you went back to patrol sergeant, and then you worked burglary, robbery, and then, of course, the creme de la cop is homicide. And you've been at homicide now since 2011. You are a sergeant. Where's this thing going for you?
Well, I mean, I don't see me going anywhere except out the door with this. You reach a point where the natural progression is to get to the homicide division. There was an opening. My predecessor had been there for quite some time, Sergeant Mike Huff, who's well known in the nationwide, especially with the Roger Wheeler murder and the Black Mass coming up. So when he moved out, it was just a natural deal for me to move in. I was in robbery and kind of took over his team. And then from there, just moved in some folks, and it's just been a smooth transition. So, but like I said, don't get me wrong, it is a lot of work and a lot of time away from family, and it's not for everybody.
And you do get called out at all hours of the night, just as the television show shows. If there was something you wanted the listeners to come away from this interview with, other than, you know, it is hard work, is it really like how we see it on that television show?
On the first 48?
Yeah.
I would say it's about as close as you're going to get, yes. I mean, there isn't really too many outtakes or retakes or however you want to put it. You're seeing it as we see it. I don't think you can really capture, you know, the emotion that goes into one of these cases. But as far as seeing what we see when we're seeing it, the first 48 does a real good job of that.
Except you'd probably like to see it wrapped up just as quick as we see it in an hour.
Yeah, I mean, yes, absolutely. Some of these are ongoing for as long as it takes, like I said. I mean, if there's a killer out there and he's going to kill again, it's kind of our responsibility to make sure that doesn't happen.
Right. I don't want to get into any open case, but is there one case that you can look back on the last few years you've been in homicide that you can look at and you can. I know that you think they're all equally as bad, but is there one that just stands out as just grisly and just it really, really sticks you? I know they all stick you, but is there that one?
Well, I think anytime you see a completely innocent victim. Now we have children victims, but besides the kids that absolutely do nothing wrong.
Right.
If you see, like, high school kids that are, one would be Kayla Ferrante, who was returning home before midnight curfew on the night of her graduation.
Right.
Was shot and killed, and there was very little evidence in that, and the team solved that one. So that one stands out. There are some college kids walking in Hicks Park early mm-hmm. on in my tenure that were shot and killed by a bunch of robbers that these kids had nothing but, you know, love and life, and they end up dead for no reason. So those type of murders are particularly hard, and they're all satisfying when you put the bad guy in jail, but in the end, you know, there's a family hurting. So, it's never a real high five type thing.
Now, what is Hicks Park? Is it just like a regular community park?
Yeah, it's just, I'm sorry. Hicks
okay.
Park is just a park where there's a football field, a baseball field, some tennis courts, and a jogging trail and a
right.
community center. And they were killed probably 10:30 at night walking along the park, the trail. Actually, one was going to Oral Roberts University and had to be some sort of health conscious, so she was trying to walk to get some points or whatever they get for being in some sort of shape, and her boyfriend was walking with her, and they had nothing, and
wow.
and were shot in the head and killed, and that's, again, when they're found in the daylight, that's, you know, they lived yeah. together, they died together.
Yeah, and you do see a lot of that nowadays, senseless shooting for really nothing, you know, gun violence, especially in Chicago, Miami. That of how is it the youths out in Oklahoma, especially Tulsa, where does it relate as to Chicago or Miami or New York or D.C.?
Well, I think we have to understand that criminals are pretty much the same everywhere. Now, when you get a New York or a Chicago, there's going to be a lot of that crime because there's a lot of those people in and around. So you're going to have the numbers drive up. But that type of mindset is the same in Tulsa, Oklahoma, as it is in Chicago. And our job is to ferret those people out and go find them. So our numbers don't rival Chicago, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not stacked up on people or, you know, we're not stacked up upon each other. So, but the mindset
right.
of the kids is about the same, senseless and no direction and pretty much dead behind the eyes.
Yeah. Now, when Mark Gordon picked Tulsa, I thought it was quite kind of interesting as opposed to some of the other cities he could have went to. When you consider the population and like we were just talking, the crime rate and murder rate, it really is quite equal to a big city if you add in the population. Are you called out often, like in the middle of the night? You just get home, you lay down, and your head hits the pillow. Does that happen a lot to you?
Well, there's a guy that retired before me. I don't want to say he's much older than me, but he did retire before me. He would always say it runs in peaks and valleys. So, yeah, we can get in that stretch where you don't want to even go to bed because the phone's going to ring again. So we have
wow.
that quite often. But then we have months. We had a month in May where we didn't have anything. So, like I said, it comes and it goes. But when it comes, it's never a good thing.
And it's got to be tough on you, especially you are a father. You have multiple kids, as you know, we talked about and went over. You know, when you go out on these crime scenes and you see these kids are relatable to, you know, your kids' age, it's got to be one of the toughest things in your job.
Well, you know, the professional part kicks in a little bit there, RJ. I mean, we can't
okay.
let our personality get in the way of that. And I like to think everybody has, or every detective that has to go stand over somebody like that takes a moment just to take it in and realize, ooh, you know, this was a living, viable person. We've got and you do what you got to do to get past it, and then we get busy, and the professional part takes over, and we do what we got to do to get the information from the scene and take it from there. So, like I said, in the end, though, somebody's going to have to be told that a loved one's dead, and it doesn't matter if the loved one's a robber or a drug addict or, you know, a high school kid that has done nothing wrong.
Right now, how do you, I mean, oh, I'm sorry, I did bring in my producer. She's actually a co-host. This is Linda Barton. She also writes crime novels, Dave, detective novels, so I asked her on here tonight.
Well, that's good. Hello.
Hi. Yeah, I wanted to ask you, have you found over the years that a lot of the senseless shootings you've been talking about are gang-related? Is that getting to be more of a problem?
Well, I think they're gang-related, yes. We have some gang-related murders. I'm talking about Tulsa now, that are absolutely senseless, and the shootings are probably up more than the murders are. Just because I guess the gangs don't have any type of weapons courses they need to take. But gang affiliation, gang mentality causes a lot of these murders, yes. But that I think ultimately, you look percentage-wise, it's not going to be as high as you would expect.
Okay. Because, you know, you always hear on the news, you know, these random shootings, you know, drive-by shooting into the wrong house, you know, they end up tracing them back to some sort of gang activity. And, you know, most people think most of the gangs are just in the big cities, but you're hearing more and more that they're getting into your more rural, you know, smaller communities. And I was just wondering if that was getting to be a problem, you know, in your area.
Well, Tulsa's always had a, you know, from the 80s on, has had a gang issue.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they're bigger than others, and right now I would say we're to the point where it's rearing its ugly head again. But there's a lot of money in the gang world. There's people making a lot of money, and there's a hierarchy that's that is there and present. And you know, and these senseless shootings you talk about do make the news, and I think that's what the news kind of gravitates to.
Well, you have a pretty high closure rate. You have an 85% closure rate. It's one of the highest in the nation, and I think only second to Oklahoma City. How do you do that? How do you stay at that type of closure rate? I mean, is it just that you have a great team of guys, or is there a certain methodical way you go about it?
Well, you can't take a murder and make it into a cookie-cutter type thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't say we've done it this way before and we're going to do it again. If you do that, then you close off a lot of avenues that we need to have open. I think the way we do it is we attack it with a lot of people. And everybody, it's everybody's case, even though we have one person assigned to it and then there's an assistant, so to speak. But we all work it, you know, not to be corny, but for the first 48 or until there's nothing to work. The closure rate comes in also when, you know, our philosophy here in Tulsa is anybody can solve this. So if our local media reporter can solve it, then let them solve it.
No, you're being a bit.
We give them carte blanche to do that. So we give them a lot of information. We give our patrol officers a lot of information. We have these tip sheets, lead sheets out there. And it's pretty much there's no secrets in our investigation unless we absolutely have to have it secret. But everybody knows what we know, and therefore there's a lot of people looking at it. And I think that helps. The other thing that helps is our administration allows me to do that. If I say I need 10 people to go sit on a house, then somehow I get 10 people to sit on the house. So I think it's more of a mentality that this is the worst crime we're going to see, and we're going to solve it.
Do you think it also goes to budgetary? I mean, you know, you are talking about a 23% higher closure rate than the national average. So it's not like what you're doing is being done everywhere else. You do have a very good track record, Dave. I know you want to be humble, but come on.
It's like I said before, you know, my tough was before me, and his rate was, you know, in the 80s, 90s. I'm sure the guy behind me or the girl behind me is going to get 80-90%, you know, so it's just we take the best and the brightest that
mm-hmm.
our administration allows us to do it, and if we need, if we only need two or three people to solve it, that's what we use, but if we need 30, That's what we get. So I don't know where the money comes from. Again, I'm not in the administration, and they didn't want me there, so I'm not. But, so
well, that
but I'll
does
spend
go
it.
To, it does go to, obviously, you know, you are being given resources, like you told Tulsa's Channel 8 ABC affiliate, quote, "No one sweats me when I say I need to travel to somewhere or if I need extra manpower. If I need 10 people stalking out a house, I get 10 people staking out the house. No one says no." I mean, that is pretty important. And you do get that in Tulsa. And it's probably, you know, one of the reasons why you have that high closure rate, along with a bright group of people. And of course, you know, let's face it, you're a very bright detective. You've been around a long time and you just know how to solve crimes.
Well, I appreciate that. And, you know, it's like I tell a lot of people, it's not rocket science. We're not curing cancer and we're not doing some of these other important things, but we are going to work, and you know, just experience tells you the human mind is going to work this way. And
right.
There's got to be, you know, there is probably easier ways of doing it, but the only way we know how to do it here is to get to the scene, find out who our person is that's deceased, and find out what that person brings to the table.
Great. All right, let me take a 30-second commercial here, Dave. We'll be right back. And callers, if you want to call in and talk to Diamond Dave at 516-531-9328, that is 516-531-9328, or you can Skype in The Real RJ Smith. And I have Linda Barton on the phone, the great crime writer, and we'll be right back after this.
Marcia, what happened?
Peter hit me in the nose with a football. I can't go to the dance like this.
Well, I'm sure it was an accident, sweetheart.
An eye for an eye. That's what Dad always says.
Hmm. Never said that, honey.
Shut up! Time to teach Peter a lesson.
Marcia, eat a Snickers.
Why?
You get a little hostile when you're hungry. Better?
Better.
Marcia, Marcia, Marcia.
Jan, this isn't about you.
It never is.
Every day, millions of amazing photos and videos are shot with iPhone. That's because the iPhone makes it easy for everyone to shoot amazing photos and video. If it's not an iPhone, it's not an iPhone.
Well, we are back. This is RJ Smith, the Master of Suspense. I do have my co-host on the phone, Linda Barton, with Detective David Walker. He is the chief sergeant out there at the Tulsa, Oklahoma Homicide Division. We ask you to go ahead and call in if you want to ask any questions. Linda, I'll go ahead and let you have Dave there for a few minutes.
Okay, great. Thanks. Yeah, first of all, I just wanted to let you know that my daughter is also a police officer.
Well, that's very nice. And then you're part of the family.
Yes, I tell you, she really surprised me the day she announced she was going to go to the academy. I never imagined it in a million years, but she loves it. We're very proud of her. She graduated top cadet in her class.
Wow, that's excellent. Where does she work?
She works in Vidor, Texas. I live in southeast Texas.
Okay,
and
good.
She's a police officer in Vidor. She was hired originally as a detective, but she did it for about 6 months, and she said, you know, she goes, I'll never be able to do this well unless I understand starting at the bottom. So she requested to be put in a patrol car, and she loves it, and I don't think they'll ever get her out of it.
Well, about 7 years, she'll feel the need to do something different. But like I said, there are patrol officers that make a career of it, and God love them for that.
She loves it. But I tell you, it amazes me how police officers are such a tight family. You know, it's such a they look out for each other and they support each other. And you know, I got really afraid when all this started happening, where police officers were being targeted. And I called her one night and I was crying, especially after the one here in Texas that got assassinated. And I was crying and scared. And she said, "Mom, we have each other's backs. Don't worry."
And it really is true. I mean, it's a nationwide fraternity, sorority, however you want to put it. When one goes down in Kentucky or Houston or, you know, Alaska, it's we all feel it. So I can't imagine. My two sons are also in law enforcement, so I get both ends of that. But to be a mother to a daughter, good for you.
Now, she's tough. I tell you what, she's called me after she's had a especially exciting day. And she'll tell me what's happened, and I'm like, boy, girl, she'll tackle him down and not afraid. So
you don't get much tackling nowadays, do you, Dave?
No, I'm a little bit slower and a lot bigger. So if it was up to me to tackle him, there'd be a lot getting away.
Listen, you know, I hate to kind of pry the embers out there, but my producers keeps handing me the same note again. Donald Trump, he says illegal immigration is causing crime in his country. You're a senior detective in middle America. Not asking you to agree or disagree. Are you seeing anything of that in your neck of the woods?
Well, certainly we're seeing that. We have put two in jail just recently for a murder of a Hispanic female. She was not illegal. I don't know who the two are that we put in jail. We just know that we captured them. We know the names they went under, but I guarantee you that's not the names who they are really who they are. But it's here and they're here and it's causing us issues. So to say that everything is fine and hunky dory would be a lie. So I think Donald Trump is correct, like everybody else. I mean, it would be a lie to say that illegal immigration and those that are here committing crimes are causing us an issue.
It does seem, come here legally. I mean, if I go to Russia or China or you do, Dave, or anyone else does, I mean, we're going to be in a hooch that quick. So I don't understand the problem. I kind of agree with him myself. We do have a caller on the line. I'm going to bring them on real quick. Caller, you're on the line with Dave Walker.
Yes, it's an honor to speak with you, Sergeant.
Well, thank you.
I know we're talking, you're talking about immigration at the moment, but I also wanted to talk or ask you about your Facebook page. You've got the Me Tours out there where you keep a lot of people on Facebook informed of what's going on.
Yes, I do. I believe that, like I said before in the show, we shouldn't have too many secrets. And if the people want to know, then the people should get to know. And I think that serves us well here in Tulsa. So I do put a lot of stuff on there, yes.
And Facebook? In other words, you get a lot of clues from Facebook and from the people.
Well, we could always use more. And I don't think I get any really from Facebook because I don't think I'm out there that much. But we do have the Crime Stoppers numbers. Since under my watch, we've put in the homicide tip line. So there's a phone.
Did you want to give that out, Dave?
Sure. That's 918-798-8477 or 798-TIPS, T-I-P-S. And that's, you know, that has solved three or four murders in itself. So it pays for itself that way. I think, you know, the old school way would be that us as detectives and homicide detectives kept everything real close to the vest. I don't understand that mentality because I think you as the public all understand that it's a tough job and sometimes we just don't know what happened and we really do need that help. And for us to say we don't need it is kind of silly. So I put it out there and if we need help, I'm the first one to say, hey, you know, we really don't know what's going on.
Right, I think John Walsh, I was actually was on the scene when Gianni Versace was murdered. I was one of the first reporters there. And I had an exclusive interview with John Walsh back then, and his show was just getting going. It was back in late 90s, so it was about 17 years in. But he's certainly proven, I think, that tipsters can certainly help you guys solve a lot of cases.
Yes. I mean, it's like I said, I don't care who solves it.
Right.
You know, our goal each year is to solve 100% of the murders that year. And, you know, when the first one goes and it goes quite a while and we haven't solved it, it kind of hurts. It stings a little bit because we know we're not going to make that goal. And, I don't know that we'll ever get there, but we're always going to strive to solve 100%. And to do that, we're going to need the public. We need them to give us the tips, and we're going to need for them to testify with what they see.
Right. We do have another caller. Thank you, caller in Kansas. I'm going to bring on a new caller, Dave. Caller, hello. You are on the phone with Sergeant Dave Walker, Tulsa Police Department Homicide Unit. Caller, are you there?
Yes.
Okay. You're on the phone with Dave Walker, sir?
Oh.
Hello. How can I help you?
I just want to say, I just kind of tuned in now, but in your career, how many cases have you actually solved all the way till the end?
Are you talking murder cases?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Gosh. We average probably 60 a year, just to say that, and we solve 55.
Wow.
I can say I am involved in every murder when I'm in town. I'm not actually the lead detective, so it's not really, you know, again, it's not me doing it. It's me taking the credit tonight, but it's the,
mm-hmm.
the workers that do that type of work. From start to finish, I can say there's been about 100.
Wow.
Wow.
Well, you know, I truly commend you. My first time being on a show, being able to talk to a officer of the law. So I truly commend the work that you folks do. And, you know, it takes
a
lot
TV
to
star.
Be out there on the streets.
Well, thank
he's
you very
TV
much.
Star,
and, you know, RJ, I'm not sure I'm a TV star, but okay. But thank you, sir. I appreciate that. Without good people out there, this job would be a lot harder. So
thank you.
Law enforcement community, thank you.
Thank you, caller. We have another caller for you, Dave. I think you are a police. I don't know. Maybe you should put a poll out there. I'd be glad to run it for you, but I think you're a television star. I don't know that. That picture of you on the First 48 website is all glittery, I got to tell you.
That's sweat. That's not glitter.
Let me ask you a question. Linda, you know, he also has a side thing. Dave, what tell us about MeTours?
Well, MeTours is just a fan page that I put out there. I have a brother-in-law that's kind of a brilliant guy up in New York City that said I should write everything down when I was a rookie cop. And I said, what the heck are you talking about? And then we get near the twilight of the career, and my wife's going, well, what are you going to do when you quit? Because you're not just going to sit around here and destroy things. You're going to have to do something. And she started talking about the experiences that I've had. And so we kind of put that out there as a way to memorialize some of the cases I've been involved in, and then kind of jog the memory a little bit. So if I ever do get a chance to get out there in the public and express this type of stuff to people that want to know, then I'll have a little bit of background. I won't have to rely on my faulting or failing memory. So Emmy Tours is out there on Facebook.
But, that's not a bad idea, actually, writing everything down as authors. Linda and I both know it's very important. But also, with your long career, you could go into anything like Joe Nitzsche down in Miami. He has his own show now that's spun off from the First 48. So you never know where it's going to go. It's always good to keep case file stuff. What is the address on Facebook? What, do they just look up MeTours on Facebook?
That's what it is, MeTours.
Okay.
On Facebook. I don't know exact what, dot, whatever, but... That's where it's at, and it's kind of me. It's not about me, but it may be up to me at some point. So that's kind of the philosophy behind it. The me part is, memorable experiences, anything you want to put in there. But it really isn't about me, and I keep trying to say that.
And hopefully we won't get to believe that
it is. So, but RJ, you have done a great job in promoting me, even though you don't know me. So. I appreciate that.
Well, I've come to know, when I was going to come out there, it was before I got hurt, and that kind of stopped everything. But when I was going to come out there and write the book, I mean, you were my go-to guy. When I contacted you through channels, you got right back to me, and I certainly respect that. You know, everything that you have to do working in homicide, you took the time to get back to a novelist, which you certainly didn't have to do. Right? You know, I went through the mayor's office and everything, and you're the one guy who responded from homicide. So that says a lot about your character, sir, and I respect you a great deal. I'm going to take another caller.
Great.
Caller, you're on the line with Detective Dave Walker from Tulsa.
Yeah, hi there, Dave. Nice to hear about you and from you.
Thank you.
I have a question. We have all been told, or led to believe anyway, that DNA is the most crucial clue in solving a crime. Is it the be-all, end-all? Does it necessarily prove that a crime is solvable?
Well, DNA absolutely give kudos to the scientists because they continue to make strides in improving that. You know, I keep hoping someday somebody will invent some glasses where you can just put them on and see the DNA. The art of it is collecting that, and that's what our crime scene people do, is collect evidence at the scene. DNA can exonerate somebody and can conclusively convict somebody. But it's not something we can see with the naked eye. And it has to go through the proper laboratory, scientific the technology that they have. And that could be 8-10 months down the road. So when you're talking to a loved one and saying, just wait 8 months and we'll get back to you, that's just not the answer that they want to hear. So DNA is something that we use. But I tell you, if I have to wait for DNA, then I'm pulling my hair out. But it is a great tool, and it continues to evolve. So DNA is going to be probably like the early 1900s when fingerprints started being looked at.
Okay. Well, so essentially, good old-fashioned sleuthing skills are not yet to be put away.
No, I don't think you'll see me being replaced by a robot. Absolutely, I think we need the human mind in there to say this type of behavior is going to lead us somewhere, and then our warrants guys who chase down these bad guys can say they, if they zig, we're going to zag. And yeah, it's going to take the human element to catch the human criminal.
Kind of takes, in a sense, with the years of experience, you get to know certain characteristics, and so therefore it kind of takes one to know one, that kind of thinking.
I know what you're saying. I am not one. But,
well, yeah, no, right.
I know what you're saying, yes. And the experience does put you right on par with them, and it does when you get in the interrogation room. We can't have a bunch of old people doing this, but we can't have a bunch of young people that have never done it before either, so we have to bring those along. And it's like the part that I tell you, it's a team, and I'm managing it at the moment, and we bring in young people, and we keep old people, and then eventually we move on. But, yeah, there are always going to be humans doing it.
All right.
Now, thank you, caller.
Thank you.
Dave, when you say old, what are you talking about? How old are you?
I'm 56.
Oh, my God. Come on. You're young. You're a young fella. You'll be doing this
for
your 70.
I'm 56. I'm 56. You're not old.
Well, I'm not old in some regards, but in police work, I can tell back when I was 40, I could remember tag numbers and names and addresses, and at 56, I don't do that so well. That's why I have to write it all down.
Well, you know why? It's because your brain is so full of all this knowledge, you've run out of room to put it.
Well, I appreciate that, but I think it's because
I'm 56.
At least
that's my excuse.
Thank you.
Linda, let me ask you a question. When you're now talking to a real detective who's been around 30 years, I mean, as an author, you have to have some questions about, I mean, you have your police detective character in your crime books, your serial killer books, Erebus. You had a really good detective in there. Are there any questions you might have for him, maybe fill out a character? Because he's one, I got to tell you, he's a live character right here.
In all honesty, meaning no disrespect to you, but anytime I have police procedural questions or anything, I call my daughter.
And that's not a disrespect. Call the daughter. You know how to talk to her.
That's right.
You know, I mean, she's been a wealth of knowledge when I call and I don't know proper terminology that you guys use and, you know, and proper weapons that you use and, you know, and everything like that. I'll call her, okay, I'm at this one part. What is I supposed to put here, you know, and she'll talk me through it. And, of course, her husband, he just retired. He was assistant police chief, so he could also help me with that, too. So I'm pretty well covered. I'm in good shape.
Dave, what is the ODA Mission of Mercy? That's a community involvement you're involved. What is that?
Okay, that, well, actually, that came about. I got involved with that. I coached baseball, Little League baseball. And my third baseman at 10 or 12, 10 to 12, I guess. I can't remember how old he was. His doctor was a dentist, Dr. Wood. And he's still my dentist today, so I'll talk good to him because he has those sharp instruments in my mouth. But he brought 1,500 a night and served free dentistry throughout the day. Of course, they lined up at night, and I was in charge of keeping them all lined and not
wow.
fighting each other and keeping the alcohol to a minimum. So I just volunteered to do that to help him out, and he's a great guy, Dr. Wood, and that still goes on today. But due to my time constraints on working homicides, I wasn't able to continue doing that. But it was a good experience. You get down there and you meet with those people that need free medical care, and they're people too. And it was always and it was a good experience.
And there's also another committee you're on. It's called the Promotional Evaluation Committee. What exactly is that? And that is a present thing you're doing.
Well, that is a when we're trying to. In Tulsa Police Department, we are trying to somehow capture the best and the brightest of our young people to become up on the command staff. So Chief Palmer, who left probably 6-7 years ago, started this program, and Chief Jordan kept it going, where we were trying to go into some sort of promotional process, screening boards, evaluation, and a promotional process that was fair, that would encompass the work product of the officer. That was never taken into consideration before we started promoting people, and then consequently we're getting people that were promoted that really didn't know what we were doing. So we were taking direction from people in the command staff that, you know, we'd look at them and go, that's not going to work, and this is why, and sometimes they would listen, sometimes they didn't. So we kind of changed that process to encompass 30% now is something that you do, what your work product is. So I think it's a lot fairer and will hopefully serve the department well as we move forward.
Okay. I have a question I'd like to ask. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, go ahead. That's right.
I had a question. One night we were all sitting around talking, and we got on the discussion of body cameras for police officers. What's your opinion of them? Do you think they're beneficial or what?
Well, I think that's what we're going to have to go with. I think every cell phone has a camera on it, and we're getting filmed from a lot of different angles. The one angle that's going to set us free is the one that we see. I'm not afraid of a body camera at all. We can absolutely use that for evidentiary purposes. We can use it to explain to the public why we do things. And is it going to hurt us somewhere? You know, maybe somewhere, but we probably should be hurt if we're doing something we shouldn't be doing.
Exactly. I agree with that. It just makes me so upset when you hear somebody making a false claim against an officer, you know, and the officer doesn't have any recourse to defend himself, you know, which if they would have had the camera, they would have been able to.
Right, and I think that's what is, percentage-wise, they're seeing that complaints against officers are going down to those departments that actually have body cameras, and exonerations are moving up. So I think we're a law-abiding profession, and we shouldn't be afraid of open and honest. I mean, sometimes what we do is scary, so sometimes you're just going to have to look at scary stuff. But most of the time it's kind of mundane, and you're going to get bored with it and turn it off. But body cameras are probably going to be in everybody's department here within 20 years anyway.
Yeah, my daughter was telling... Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay, Linda. I wanted to speak to that. Go ahead, Linda. Go ahead.
Okay, well, my daughter was talking about an instance that at her department where an officer had pulled a man over. He was speeding. You know, he was definitely not driving properly in the road. The officer was, you know, asked for his license, the normal procedure you go through. The guy got kind of belligerent with him. Well, when the officer went ahead and gave him the ticket, a little bit later, the man shows up at the police department saying the officer was being, you know, disrespectful to him. You know, he was ranting and raving and everything like that. Well, when they brought out this little film, guess what? The story changed.
So, absolutely. I think it's, I mean, I think we can turn that into something that we could be able to use in court. You're going to see what we see. And by golly, that's what we try to do in court is recreate the scene.
You know, that speaks to also, I mean, there was a, issue of one of the guys on the crime scene recently where an initial video came out and we didn't see the whole thing, did we? And that's a big problem for you guys where the media shows part of a video or they only get part of it. And then later you find out, oops, there's a whole nother part to that video. So that is one of the problems you guys face, right, with cell phones.
Certainly it is. Video... I mean, there's things that are on the video that when you slow it down frame to frame, you're going to see a lot of things that you wouldn't see on the first, you know, 30 seconds of a news clip. And
right.
That speaks to us having to have some relationship with our local media also. And I think we in Tulsa do have a great relationship with our media. We can say, you know, don't treat us that way and we'll treat you right. So, but... You're right. Video can well, when the media shows it that way, and people see it, that's all they're going to see. They're not going to see the rebuttal or anything like that. So that does a disservice to actually society when you do that, because everybody then starts hating the police more than they should.
Right. I was going to ask you about that. I mean, in your case, it worked out to be good, but the politics relating to police force is really changed as far as activism goes, and I can go back to just the Good Friday shootings. I mean, they were on your side in that instance, but Sharpton, Jackson, they all flew in from New York and, you know, kind of got the beehive going there in Tulsa. How much does politics really play into it? I mean, do you guys have to constantly fight off false allegations and, the politics of it? Activism.
Yeah,
so like the activism that's going on now.
Well, I think that there are people that will do that, and I can only speak to Tulsa. We don't have that, and I don't know if that – I mean, I think that is because our leaders in the black community are reasonable. They're not out there to have an axe to grind. I mean, if we do wrong, they say it. If we're not wrong yet, then they wait, and I think that's what they did on the Good Friday killings. They said, let's band together.
Mm-hmm.
The tip came in Saturday morning on that, which most people do not know that, but, people wanted it to be bigger than it was. Our leaders in the churches up north and the black leaders in Tulsa said it's not going to be that big. Let's let the police department work, and they did.
Oh, and certainly. We were going to come out and do a – we were actually going to come out and do a TV show on it. So, I mean, it was big, and everybody was making a bigger deal. I mean, the truth of it is that these type of things, unfortunately, happen in cities all across America all the time. Unfortunately, this did get politicized.
Right. I mean, yes. I mean, it got big in a hurry. It was bigger than I wanted it to be, but I think our chief and our mayor and those leaders knew it was going to be big, and that's what they get paid to do. So I listened to them when they said put it on the national news that we got a white truck. And I told our chief, I said, that's the only thing we got.
Right.
They don't put out the only thing we got. That's our only lead. And they said, do it. And you don't ask why. I mean, they're the bosses. We did it, and it worked out great.
I don't want to really beat this, but the curiosity, I was going to write this book and do the TV show. So the curiosity's got the better of me on this. Through your investigation, can you talk about this at all now, or is there still appeal processes?
Oh, I don't think there's any appeal processes. They pled guilty for that very reason.
Okay. They told me now, I had extensive interviews with these guys, hours and hours of tapes, especially with the England. He told me that they were out at a casino and doing Xanax and alcohol. Was there anything that came up in your investigation about that came into the decision-making, or was it just purely racial as far as your perspective?
Gosh, I hope it was because they were looped up on Xanax and alcohol. I hate to think that, there's racists in this town. I'm not going to say they're not. But to cold-bloodedly kill people walking down the street, that's, you don't want to think that the human mind works that way. So it had to be something, making it foggy. And I think that Xanax and alcohol did, but I think also there's just meanness in that. And I think very little of it had to do with his father's murder.
Right. He also told me that.
And you look at that, and his father was in the wrong place at the wrong time, doing the wrong things, and I don't think anybody got prosecuted in that. So
I also actually talked to Purcell when he was in prison out there, and I don't think they did either. Do you have anything else you want to add, Linda?
Oh, wow, that was really interesting. It breaks my heart when I hear things like this happening in our country. It makes me angry when I hear people that do these horrible deeds. They try to blame it on, I had a bad childhood, or I was whacked out on drugs, or whatever like that. Well, you know what? It must have been inside of you in the first place. It just opened it up and let you do it. And this is my personal opinion. I'm so thankful for communities like yours that held reasonable heads, worked together as a community to solve that heinous crime, So many times, like we've heard, the media gets involved, the activists get involved, it gets blown up, and nothing gets done, but your community held together as one and solved it and put those guys where they need to be, and I just want to applaud Tulsa. You guys did, you did really well. You should be proud of yourself.
Well, Tulsa did shine on that.
You guys did shine big on that.
I will take, I will accept the gratitude, but I can't accept, I had a real small part in that. It was our leaders that had the wisdom about them to do that, and it was actually the town itself that followed their leader. So Tulsa is a great town. We've got our racial problems, and don't want to say we don't, but by golly, it's not like every other, Chicago or Ferguson or these other areas where they're rioting, Baltimore in that area. We just don't get to that level, and I think it's because we have a professional police force. We have great leaders in that community, and our mayor and police chief get out in front of these things.
All right, well, I'd like to thank you for coming on, Dave. You've been, a hero of mine for a long time. I'm looking forward to seeing your episodes again next year. I actually am addicted to your show. There was one episode, actually, when you were at the motel. It was a motel murder or something. Just absolutely riveting, that show. And I want to thank you for coming on behalf of myself and the network and the producers. And Linda, you want to say anything?
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed spending this time with you this evening. Thank you for your service, and I wish you much success in the future in whatever endeavors you take on.
Well, thank you, Linda. RJ, I appreciate it. It was a wonderful experience.
Thank you, Dave, and we'll send people to MeTours on Facebook, And of course, you know, thanks for doing what you're doing, and we will be looking for you on the First 48, as you are a television star. Have a good evening.
Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye.
Right. Bye-bye.
Marcia, what happened?
Peter hit me on the nose with a football. I can't go to the dance like this.
Well, I'm sure it was an accident, sweetheart.
An eye for an eye. That's what Dad always says.
Hmm. Never said that, honey.
Shut up! Time to teach Peter a lesson.
Marcia, eat a Snickers.
Why?
You get a little hostile when you're hungry. Better?
Better.
Marcia, Marcia, Marcia.
Jan, this isn't about you.
It never is.
Every day, millions of amazing photos and videos are shot with iPhone. That's because the iPhone makes it easy for everyone to shoot amazing photos and video. If it's not an iPhone,
this is RJ Smith, Storytell Entertainment Radio. I am on the phone with my co-host, Linda Barton. She's a great thriller writer. I ask you all to go look at her books on Barnes & Noble, Amazon, everywhere books are sold. So Linda, what do you think about that, huh? That's one hell of an experience, 30 years in law enforcement.
Oh, I am so impressed. He was a spectacular guest. Oh, kudos for having him on. I learned a lot.
Oh.
I really did.
You know, I bumped into him quite by accident back when, you remember, when I was going after the Good Friday Killer story, and I actually got the exclusive with them guys, the killers. And he was a quite gentleman when he contacted me on behalf of the mayor's office and the police department, and I always remembered him. And then he showed up on the First 48, and I thought, wow, you know, knowing I was going to do this show, I thought he'd make a great guest, and he certainly didn't disappoint us.
Oh, not at all, not at all. I'll have to catch him on that show. My husband is, you know, Bob, he's really big into the ID channel and all the crime shows and stuff, so I'll have to tell him about this one.
Yeah, and you are going to be a co-host, right? You are going to come on a couple times and possibly even take over one night in the near future?
Yes, I've been doing a lot of thinking about it, and I think you've got me convinced. I'm not saying I'm not nervous.
Now, let's talk a little bit about your books, because, I'm more, I write more different genres, disaster, alien, stuff like that, but you really are, a crime writer. Let's talk a little bit, since we have a little bit of time here. I didn't want to take up too much time of Detective Dave. I mean, he's been working long days. Your thriller books, your serial killer books, let's talk a little bit about them.
Okay. Well,
the listeners aren't really familiar with your books, and I'd like them to pick them up because I think highly of you, especially, Erebus really caught my attention when I read about him.
Isn't he a wonderful villain?
he's a terrible, yeah. Frightening villain, yeah.
He is, because he's not your normal villain. That was my debut novel, Next Move, You're Dead. He was the brainchild of my husband, who is my writing muse.
Yes.
And he just looked at me one day and he says, I have a great idea for a book, and Erebus was born. he's not your normal villain. In most stories you have, if it has a serial killer, they have a reason for doing it. You know, there's gratification in the kill or obtaining the trophy or different reasons like that. But that's not his motivation, because when he kills, it's not the act of killing that fulfills him. What fulfills him is destroying his opponent. He chooses a police officer, usually a detective, and one that he has seen on the media that got a lot of praise for solving a spectacular case. So I hate to think our last guest might have been a target for this.
And the name of the, we want to just tell the listeners the name of that book series, because it is a three-book series, correct?
It's a trilogy, yes. The Next Move, You're Dead trilogy. And I have it available. You can get the book separately, or you can get them in one combined download or paperback. I did that because, try to save people some money. You can buy all of them for one price as opposed to buying them three separately. But anyway, he chooses his opponent in the game. Imagine a chess game of life and death. He sets up pieces, as he calls them, which are individuals, to try to have that officer solve what's going on. And the whole time of it is his purpose is to destroy that officer. A lot of twists and turns in the story. It goes through the entire trilogy in the end. And finally, in the last book, you finally learn who he is, where he's come from, and everything. And, you know, if you thought you hated him in the first two books, you will loathe him by the third.
That is true. Now, I don't hate me, but one of my favorite books, and you did send me an autographed copy of it, is Pure Justice. And Hell's Fire Judgment, too, is up there.
Uh-huh.
Are you thinking about coming up with it? Are you going to continue in those storylines at all, maybe? Maybe resurrect something?
I can't in Pure Justice because it's perfect just the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
I love Ted. He's a Vietnam veteran.
Mm-hmm.
Comes back from the war with his two best buddies who are murdered by anti-war protesters because they corrupt their lawyer. They got themselves some slick lawyers, and they beat the system. They get away with it. Ted decides that, and he ends up being a vigilante who goes around killing people who beat the system. And he does it as an eye for an eye.
Wow.
It's rather graphic, but he's one of my favorite characters, that one right there. He truly is. I love Erebus because he's dark and creepy, but I love Ted because he just makes you feel good. You know, when the bad guys are always getting away with things, Ted's the type you want to call and say, okay, take care of him. So,
now,
you
did tell me the other day when we spoke, we have been friends for quite some time. We were going to get into a publishing company, I guess. We've been friends for, what, 3-4 years now, I think? Somewhere around there.
Like that. Mm-hmm.
Now you're getting into YA writing. Tell me about that. And it was pretty quick, right? You wrote this book in a few weeks?
I wrote it in 2 weeks. I can't believe I've never done that before. I woke up one morning. This book was in my head. And if I didn't get it down, I felt like I was going to go crazy. And I just started working on it. 2 weeks later, it was done. It's called The Dragon's Blood Key.
Mm-hmm.
I'm currently working on part two. I love it. It has magical creatures. It has dragons.
Mm-hmm.
It has, you know, traveling between realms. It has a young, well, she's 16. She's the hero, so the young girls get to have their hero. She's tough. You know, she takes on the evil queen. It's a great, fun book. Lisa Vanderveer, who's a friend of mine, her daughter just got done reading it. She's 8 years old. She's an advanced reader. I was very impressed. She loved it. Absolutely loved it. Can't wait for book number two.
Speaking of her, I just sent her a message. Where is she? We've been waiting for her all evening. I sent her a message. Lisa, where are you? Now, The Dragon's Blood Key, you do have it available in paperback at $12 and $2.99 for the Kindle, which is a very good price point. And it's 300 pages. It's not a small book.
No, it's not. It's a good book. I really enjoyed writing it. Like I said, I was possessed. I have never had that happen before. 12-hour, 14-hour straight, and then I just fall into bed, and I get up again and start over again. And I had that entire book done in 2 weeks. I mean,
wow!
I was like, I can't believe it. It usually takes me, if I consider I'm writing fast, I'll get a book done in 3 to 4 months.
Incredible.
But this one just exploded out of me. So I don't
know.
And
they can read
more.
They can read more about that on your website, deadlyreads.com, right?
Oh, yeah. You can go on there. We have an excerpt. You can go under my name. And the drop down, it'll show my books, and you can go in there, and I even have, you know, first chapter excerpts from all my books.
Mm-hmm.
It's all right there. Go on the website, look around. We're even starting a new feature on the website. Did you see that on Facebook when I announced it, RJ?
Yeah, I'm actually going there right now as we speak. I'm actually on my way to your website.
and the website address is
You caught me. You heard me typing. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so, you have Linda Barton, Lisa. You have Lisa on that blog, Deadly Reads Author Services, right? I know about that. You did a very good rendition of Santa for me in a new book, Deadly Reads News. I like that. I mean, it's looking good. It's certainly coming along. You're working hard on this thing.
Yeah, we're doing a new feature where we're going to now the younger folk won't know this, but the older ones will have heard of it. You know, at the turn of the century in the movies, back in the early, 1900s, when they would show a little short movie before the feature film.
Right.
They had the little serials every time, and people would come in and they'd watch the next episode or, a segment of Buck Rogers or, those. Well, Lisa and I decided that it would be fun to take some stories that we had started writing that we hadn't really, had time or whatever to continue with, and we're going to start putting once a week on Tuesdays a new segment of that story. Well, this last Tuesday we put the first one on there. It's a smaller one, but most of them will be about 3,000 words apiece for Flight 437,
oh, wow.
RJ.
Oh, yes. I've been waiting for this book. You're going to do it.
We're going to do it. It's going to be free on the website. You go every week and you can read it right there. It's going to be an ongoing series every week. And then when we finish that book, we're going to do another one. And we're just every week we're going to have, a new segment for each book. And then when that book's done, we'll start a new book.
That's actually a very good idea, serial. And what would the price point be for those? Like 99 cents an episode or something?
No, they're going to be free. We're giving those away to our readers.
Oh, wow. Flight 437?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I got to get it. I've got to have it.
You got to come back each week. Now,
well, listen,
end,
Linda.
When it's all done, I'm going to put it all together in one, and then people can just download the entire book if they want to keep it.
That's fantastic. So what are you working on right now?
Right now, I'm working on book number 2 for The Dragon's Blood Keys. It's going to be called Return to Alindra. And that's where the big battle is going to happen between the dragons and the evil queen. In my books, the dragons are good. But between the dragons and the evil queen and Cassie, the little girl from our realm, she goes back to fight. You learn all about her past, where her ancestors. It's going to be quite intense. It's going to be a fun book.
Right now, I am looking at the serial page on your website. Now, everybody, don't forget to go to Deadly Reads on Facebook and hit that like button and head on over to her website. Linda, I'll be talking to you in a couple of days. We're going to be coming up here on a quarter hour. I think we'll get out of here nice and quick. Thanks for coming on, and I'll be talking to you. And real quick, just to let the listeners know, I think tomorrow night, 8 o'clock, we have Robert Snow on. You know Robert. He's my United Kingdom literary agent. He's also a television entertainment agent. He's into ghosts, and he does television shows and all that. So that's going to be kind of fun. I encourage people to come on tomorrow and listen to that. So thanks a lot, Linda, and I'll see you tomorrow night.
All right. Bye.
Bye, girl. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. This is Storyteller Entertainment, and we're going to head on out. Thanks for tuning in this evening, and thank you very, very much to Dave Walker of the Tulsa Police Department. He is the lead homicide detective sergeant of the homicide unit. He is responsible for putting a lot of people in bars. He's responsible for closing 85% of homicide cases with his team. And he always says, if it wasn't for his team, couldn't do it. So we want to thank his team, whoever they may be in the Tulsa Homicide Department unit. We want to thank Dave Walker and everyone in Tulsa for listening in. And this is RJ Smith. Have a good evening, everyone. Thanks for taking this ride in the night with me. Better with you.